Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
Addison Russell, you've got something that other teams might want. I think it's time for you to rid yourself of the headache. You've done what you needed to do in terms of trying to get him the help he needed and let him find his second chance somewhere else. Players deserve second chances. Human beings, people deserve second chances. I just don't know why the second chance had to come from the Cubs. Right now, what you have are a whole bunch of problems knocking on the doorstep.
There's baseball problems and optics problems.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's the amount of landmines that he creates that this story creates.
This just isn't a situation that they need to be in right now. They've done as best they could the right thing for Russell and his family. That's admirable. But I don't need this guy on the Cubs.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport. Brian Geltzeiler, HoopsCritic.com, SiriusXM, NBA TV, talks NBA playoffs at 10. A lot of fun stuff going on there. A lot of really cool things. Midday Midway 10:20. Len Casper on the Cubs at 11. We've got a shot to win $1,000 in cash. You have to listen for the text keyword to make it a lucky Thursday for you. And dinner for Cinco, that's five, guests at Chuy's Tex-Mex Restaurants, your official Cinco de Mayo headquarters, locations in Orland Park, Warrenville, and Schaumburg. And
we brought some of the goods by this morning.
I'm full of Chewies at the moment.
Rolled,
man.
Through the buffet line. Thank you so much.
That's how you're supposed to start it. And the cool thing about Tex-Mex is warm queso.
Oh yeah.
And the hot salsa is all nice. The cool tomatoes, the melted cheese, the charred arachera.
You know what was too? They brought the. Do you have some of the jalapeno ranch?
Maybe stuff? I did. I put that on some of the grilled chicken.
On everything. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you. Chewy's Tex-Mex restaurants. And Connor, you're going to be out there, obviously.
Yeah. Sunday from noon to two, we're going to celebrate Cinco de Mayo out in Schaumburg, 1701 East Gulf Road at Chewy's Tex-Mex. Should be an interesting and fun afternoon.
You heard the highlights yesterday of Connor trading Addison Russell.
I'm ready.
Just saying that's it. That's enough. Build up his value, let him rake at AAA, and then move him along and pull the ripcord on it. I found myself after watching the Cubs yesterday thinking something. First of all, the first thing I thought, play every baseball game at 5:40.
Oh, what a beautiful.
That is perfect.
Wonderful start time. And if you can get that start time with the shadows right where they were against a Mariners team that was facing a John Lester cutter that was on,
I wasn't even thinking about it. It was not taking that into consideration. But the 5:40 start, Rob Manfred or baseball teams, if you are listening, it is just absolutely ideal. You're like, it's a sweet spot for starting a sporting event. So thank you for that. But the question is, at 16-12, I usually talk about this, start of June?
Yeah, it's probably at least 3 weeks from now.
I always talk about good teams when you know your team is good, and that's a Pecota projection notwithstanding. When you know your team is good and you expect that you are going to be a winning team, when have you reached escape velocity from the 500 mark? The Cubs are rolling. And this is always the time to do it when it feels like things are good. 1-6 didn't feel so good, did it?
No, 2-7 didn't feel great either.
No, and they're 16-12 after winning 4 in a row.
Yeah.
And absolutely dusting the Mariners yesterday. Just blowing their doors off. Have they reached it? Hey, can you put 500 and dalliance with 500 in the rearview mirror for 2019?
Well, I'll tell you what matters here is the next couple weeks, because you've picked an earlier time than normal to ask this question to Cubs fans, whether or not they have the escape velocity, the kind of ball club that will now stay above 500 and challenge the Cardinals. What matters here is the schedule itself. Off day today, 3 against the Cardinals, 4, say it again, 4 against the Miami Marlins, which are a triple-A ball club at best. And then you've got 3 against the Brewers, all of those games at home. That's 2 good teams and 1 horrendous, terrible, awful team. So, yeah, I think with the week ahead, given the fact that the Cardinals are one of, if not the best team in the National League, I mean, we can do a whole bunch of conversations about whether or not it's the Cardinals or the Dodgers, and it's a fun one to have. But you've got now some veterans settling. And I think that's probably the most important thing for the Cubs. You have John Lester settling and really performing top-notch yesterday against a damn good Mariners offense. You've got Yu Darvish looking as settled. No, hold on. Because you got to do it start by start. I told you this as soon as the season began, that you have to look at the Darvish you get each and every 5 days. That's just what you have to do. However, that's as settled as he's looked in quite some time. So if you want to take the snapshot, if you want to do the right now, what does it look like to you? Looks about as good as it could.
I'd like to see David Bote pick up the baseball.
Yeah, that's
figure out what to do
you
with
know
it.
For as many good plays as he makes at third, it seems like he doesn't know or isn't comfortable when to surround the baseball, when to come around it, and when to just backhand it and pick it at third base. It looks like it's a decision making process, not an athleticism program.
It's also know your personnel. It's also understand how much time you have based on, you know, it's not everybody's D. Gordon. That you don't have to be spectacular all the time. Just know who's where and stay within yourself.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think that's probably know who's going against you. I think too, you know, as much as it's veteran settling, did you watch Dylan Maples?
Yes.
That's the kind of, I mean, we talked to Len about it. We've got Len today at 11 o'clock. That's the kind of slider, that's the kind of stuff that bullpen did not possess through a 2-7 start. It's the kind of stuff it did not possess until he got called up, or maybe even until Carl Edwards starts pitching the way he's used to. That is nasty.
Well, we know
nasty stuff.
Oh, the nasty is in there. It's a matter of being a professional pitcher and not just a guy who can unleash nasty stuff. And if one can meet the other, that is going to be special. And they've always known that. But there's going to be some outings where he throws 5 pitches and you know it's just not there.
Well, not even close. Nowhere close. I think, too, when you talk about escape velocity, it's and staying over 500, probably the most important thing for this team, this 2019 team, is the continued performance of a starting rotation. It's not hard. You know, I mean, it's not something that's you don't get points for subtlety here. You saw it going into the season. You saw it when we were down in spring training for the Scorehouse week when we talked with Jed, we talked with Joe. This is a team that got constructed to have quality starts from all 5 guys in the rotation. That's not something that's all that common in baseball right now, but that's the way the Cubs have put things together. Mm-hmm. So when you get 3 to 4 quality starts out of guys, or when you get just...
Are you saying literal quality starts?
Not necessarily. I guess you'd have to do the Les Grobstein subjective quality start
here.
Well,
guess what?
In some cases.
We have to start changing that. I want to talk to Len about that because Len is a big fan of the correlative nature of the quality start, which, just so you know...
Or the hitting the 3-run homer.
Correct. But the quality start is 6 or more innings with 3 or fewer earned runs.
And that is not a subjective thing.
That is
not
actually
true.
And that correlates to a 70% likelihood of winning the game.
Uh-huh.
But times are changing rapidly.
Yeah, the offensive environment has changed. The depth of the starting pitcher has changed. Well, I shouldn't say the depth, but the longevity of starting pitchers within a particular game is changing. I wouldn't mind leaving it there for a little while. I mean, I'm open to the argument, but I wouldn't mind leaving it there for a little while just as a benchmark. I mean, just as, you know, the win has gone away. It's sloughed off because baseball changed. But that's
stupid.
It is stupid. But that doesn't mean it wasn't somewhat important in times past. I mean, it was different. The batting average was much more important in the early formative years of baseball than it is now. I mean, it's just, I wouldn't mind it sticking around as a benchmark somewhat for a little while.
I just want to recalibrate the benchmark for what matters. That's all I'm saying. Is I want to know what correlates to victory. I want to know, is it now 5 innings? and two? Is it five and three? Like it's this. We can reset some of these values here to redefine what actually, literally, objectively constitutes quality.
Sure.
You know, our definition of quality is literally changing. Here come the responses via text to this question about have the Cubs reached escape velocity from 500? The 217 says if you get two out of three this weekend, then 500 is left in the dust. The 310 says no. The 847 says ask me again after this weekend. The 630 says, this is Tony in Bowling Brook. He answers my question, no, 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 no.
Ah, just not sure how Tony feels about things.
Tony, I'm stop making it difficult and stop being inscrutable for us to figure out what you're saying. 310 says Maples is already better than CJ Edwards.
The Cubs still need CJ Edwards to get his stuff together and pitch well. I mean, it's a better bullpen when CJ Edwards is pitching the way he can pitch.
And a good point for the 219. The Edwin Encarnacion reaction to the slider was all you need to know.
What right-hander moves their back foot like that from a right? That doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's weird.
The guy's back half is bailing out of a pitch that's going to end up breaking away from him. That doesn't happen. I mean, he ruins people with this thing. And I got to be honest, the fact that his fastball is just kind of a maybe hit the bull kind of thing anyway probably helps in making that guy dance. It probably helps. And you know what else helps? As much as we're going to get into John Lester in a little bit, a fantastic start for him, what has been the most impressive thing so far from the Cubs, even during their 2-7 start, is the fact that you have Javier Baez floating the offense through thick and thin. Javier Baez, who is a regression candidate, as much as everybody wants to say, no, he's not. He's regression proof. He's Javi Baez. He's an MVP care. He was a regression candidate, and he has been anything but. He's the steadying force in this offense. Javi Baez, the guy who came up with a scouting report that was so wild, skill sets that were through the ceiling.
So was Yelich.
And so much literal and metaphorical swing and miss in that guy's game and scouting profile. And he has become the steadying force on a Cubs offense now for the better part of a year and a half.
Yeah, this mercurial.
It's incredible.
He has become reliable.
It is incredible.
In a short period of time. And I got to take issue with Mr. Pouty Pants here via text. He says, I love it when you say escape velocity like nobody knows you're not saying momentum. I really genuinely mean the definite escape velocity is the minimum speed at which something can break a gravitational field.
You could have also just said good enough.
I could have, but I like to picture them in zooming away from this orb that is this gravitational field of 500.
Or make it so other people can't understand it.
I think people could picture a round thing that exerts a gravity.
We all watch the space race.
Because it has mass, therefore it is exerting gravity. All things exert gravity on other things when there is mass, and that escape flow moving away. It's not momentum. Momentum's mass times velocity. This is
momentum's ethereal too. At least when it comes to a baseball conversation.
Right, this is are they now good enough to have put 500 in the rearview mirror on May 2nd?
Plus, did they fix their
problems? Dos de Mayo.
They are still going to have to. The thing that bothers me about saying whether they have or have not reached a point where they won't slip back under 500 is knowing and listening to Theo Epstein talk about the fact that they're going to have to pick their spots. For bullpen arms, they're going to have to be real solid in terms of in-game and week-long deployment of bullpen arms because the guys they've got are guys you're getting by with.
You may be wondering, why was John Lester awesome yesterday?
Ooh.
There are a lot of actual baseball reasons behind it, and Connor's our pitching guru, so he's sort
apprentice.
Of he's the Bernstein and McKnight pitching coach.
Actually, he's our pitching guru.
So he's got all the answers. This is why John Lester was good.
At a two-year course instead of four.
And I want to know what we can continue to expect. What is something that can be replicated? What can be counted on to know that we'll see this again? That is next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Here's the 2-2. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Another strikeout for Lester. That's eight strikeouts for John. He's just mowing down Mariners.
It's probably the best of my back for cutters, Ben, to righties. But, I mean, obviously, I think having the shadows helped with that pitch. We were able to kind of exploit that a little bit more than we probably would have on a normal day. But, yeah, with probably the exception of the fourth and fifth inning, I felt like I threw the ball really well.
Because you did, John Lester. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. And this segment brought to you by Eon Clinics. All right, what's he doing right? What happened out there? What did you see?
Maybe, just maybe, you missed it in the cut Rick played coming back because of John Lester's southern drawl and just kind of working through what he did. But Lester said, that's probably the best my backdoor cutter has been to right-handers. And it was very good. But I find it interesting to watch John Lester in the context of the rest of baseball. I thought he worked high-low really well with the cutter and the fastball yesterday. And it's kind of borne out in some of the numbers. Shahadev Sharma broke down the start like he always does. John Lester's 26.5% strikeout rate is the second highest of his career. I'll say that again because John Lester is an old man on this starting staff. And everybody said, including me, that more than likely, this is the guy you fit real nicely into the five spot in your rotation and know that he's got a quality start for you here and there, and he can get you deep into ball games and he won't hurt you. John Lester is pitching to the second highest strikeout rate of his career. His other highest is like 10 years ago, and it's 0.2 off of what he's doing now. 26.7% is his career high. 26.5 is what he's punching out now. He had 24 looking strikes yesterday. 24 of them. You know, that's putting stuff exactly where you need to. That is flummoxing and befuddling a Mariners lineup that I don't think they have the lead in. No, they do. They still have the lead in home runs.
Befuddling and flummoxing?
And flummoxing.
If you can accomplish both.
Well, the cutter befuddled and the fastball flummoxed, I thought, yesterday.
See, this is why you're the pitching guru.
13 were, well, I listen to Don Cooper talk a lot. 13 were, and most of those words I can't say, so I go with befuddle and flummox. 13 fastballs were taken looking strikes and 10 cutters. So that's where I've come up with the language there.
But the significance is backdoor cutter, where he's not necessarily talking, probably throwing it to right-handers.
Yeah, right-handers.
Where grabbing a strike on the outer half of the plate, where in the past, he had tried to run that thing under the hands of a right-hander.
Yeah, he tried to Derek Holland his way into right-handers and just kind of...
Don't use that as a verb.
Well...
please.
It makes sense, because when you try and do that and miss, you get Derek Holland and it just goes... ball goes very far. It's a very dangerous way to live if you're a lefty throwing 90. But Lester has worked up and down, and it's fascinating to watch a guy as crafty as he can be and stubborn as he can be at times. And I mean that within a start, you know, just kind of going back to stuff that he wants to throw, going back to stuff that he can get done. And kind of stubborn is kind of a begrudging respect for a starter in this sense, not like it's necessarily something that's hurting him. But now he's working high-low, or at least yesterday against the Mariners he did.
You have to now.
Throwing that high fastball now is something that keeps the big bats away from hurting you. That's how you avoid some of the mammoth shots that we're seeing left and right in baseball.
Careful with mammoth.
I love mammoth.
I don't know if you follow...
I'm not stopping mammoth.
Productive outs on Twitter.
Mammoth.
They've planted their flag in the use of mammoth for home runs this year in baseball. They are tracking what they are calling an invasion of mammoths. The number of websites. It's a mammoth invasion. That every home run now is being described as mammoth.
What's wrong with mammoth? It's a wonderful adjective.
It's a great word. It's almost an onomatopoetic word. Mammoth.
Mammoth. So many M's. M's take up so much space on the page.
It's a big word. It sounds like that. The animal, a woolly mammoth, you know, is it just everything about it sounds big.
Dinger is my favorite word for home run.
Dong.
But I'm a dinger guy. Always have been. But
I'm not going to say the equivalent of that.
Mammoth is my favorite adjective for Homer.
Speaking of one,
I was trying to get you there.
Thank you. This segment is brought to you by the Chicago Bears. Don't miss out on Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through 9th in Rosemont. The coach, Mike Ditka, will be there talking about his time with the Bears as both a player and coach. See this and more, plus free autographs and photo ops only at Bears 100 Celebration Weekend. Visit ChicagoBears.com for tickets.
Why won't you embrace Dong the same way that I've embraced Dinger? I don't understand.
I
say the words.
It's just not the particular verbiage, which I know will be revisited upon me.
Well, you're in the open at 11.
perpetuity. No, this idea of swing shape now, and we're going to get into this with some research that Eno Saris of The Athletic has done about the home run explosion. It's not just the ball. It's not just the ball. Something else is going on. Hitters are doing something. Part of it is swing path, and we knew this. Part of it is hunting low in the zone, launch angle, everything we talked about down in Mesa with Chris Bryant about getting out in front and hitting the bottom third of the ball. I may want to bring some of that back, actually, because he did a really good job of explaining some of what a lot of hitters are doing in what he does.
He's doing a hell of a lot better job doing the things that he talked about doing.
But the problem is guys like Lester, old guys who were always taught, work low, work low, work low. Low is better. You leave it up high, bad things happen. That's just not true anymore. And remember when Jesse Chavez was on with us when we were at the Brickhead Luncheon Series?
That remains one of my favorite conversations with a ball player that we've had in the year and plus that we've done this.
Yeah, and Chavez always said it was about seeing the path of the swing, seeing the reaction to the ball, and looking at that next individual hitter and where his swing path is. And maybe there's a little bit more of that going on even in the old country hardball with Lester in the understanding when it's time to raise the eye level a little bit.
Well, so this is kind of what goes into Javi Baez a little bit. This is what goes into Tim Anderson's swing a little bit. And we talked some about Tim specifically and his ability to hit everything he swings at. And boy, does he swing it a lot. So does Javi Baez. Did you notice that the in the second inning, Javi had the dinger and the double, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two pitches. Home run and double on two pitches. If it's in the strike zone, he's going. Tim Anderson's much the same way. If it's in the strike zone, he's going. But the difference, at least to me, in both Javi and Tim Anderson's approaches and their ability to succeed here is the fact that once they're behind in the count, let's say they do swing and miss on that first pitch and they don't actually, you know, knock the double or something like that. Now you've got a swing that doesn't have to be everything once you're behind in the count. And maybe that applies more to Tim than it does to Javi, but you've got this swing, and maybe it's the path that you can alter a little bit too, that's in more control, that you're expecting something from this pitcher. You're expecting to get something more.
This is Madden 101.
You're just letting it go.
This is Joe Madden hitting philosophy 101 you're talking about. There's some B-hack stuff.
A little bit.
Of controlling your swing. And it's also, especially when scouts talk about it, guys whose bat remains in the zone for a longer period of time.
Ted Williams wrote about this.
I know, but that's something you hear. But some guys have a swing that'll just chop off a little chunk of the three-dimensional zone.
Yeah.
You know, that's when Nick Madrigal was being discussed. When you talk about some of these guys with a hit tool of a bat that can remain in the zone and allow you to make adjustments within your swing that way. You know, I was thinking about this whole swing path thing, too. I was reverse engineering something when I was watching my son umpire a junior game over at Wells last weekend.
How old are juniors?
The juniors are 7 and 8.
So they're not pitching to each other.
It's tee the first time through and then coach pitch. And have you ever coach pitched to little kids?
No.
Okay.
I played in a coach pitch league, but I never coach pitched.
If I'm speaking to you, the coach pitch dad or mom, the idea of seeing the swing path and hitting the bat.
Oh, interesting.
That's what they do. It's the opposite. So when you see the swing, all right, I'm going to get this kid a hit because you know exactly where to put it to meet the bat in the shape of the swing. And I was sitting behind the back, so I'm like, well, wait a sec. This is the opposite of what pitchers are trying to do when you see the swing. Okay, where's the hole of the swing, or are we changing eye level?
Right.
So I was just wondering, like, if you're trying to tunnel it up, you know, oppositely, like, how do I get this ball to, because you pitch to your own kids, obviously.
Yeah.
How do you get the ball to the barrel of the bat?
Jay, you're in a coach pitch league, right? I think Jay's in a coach pitch. You've got to wear a cup for that, right?
No, it doesn't come off not with most of these
it's
kids.
7 and 8? Nah. I'd still worry. I feel like that's a
softer ball,
funniest
too.
Home videos waiting to happen or something.
It might be, but I've never.
Oh, they play with the softy ball.
Not soft. It's in between. There's degrees. There's the T-ball, which is the softest.
I was unaware
There's
of
the
that.
Junior ball, which is slightly soft. And then once you get up to minors, I think they use
the innovations in youth baseball are amazing to me. I mean, when I eventually have kids, obviously we'll be giving participation trophies to everyone. The trophies will have trophies, you know, by the time I have kids. But we'll also have baseballs that find the bats themselves. We won't even need coaches.
Yeah, aluminum-seeking baseballs.
Yeah, it'll be great. This is fantastic.
Brian Geltzeiler is as fascinating and informed and compelling an NBA voice as is out there. And if you're starting to take notice of what's going on in the NBA playoffs, as many are, there's been a lot of storylines, a lot of things going on, a lot of gamesmanship. He is here to talk about all of it. The inimitable tones of Geltzy coming your way next on The Score.